The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm ready to go.
Streaming now only on Peacock. Five rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
It's a great time of year.
It is.
It's a magical time of year. When you are 12 years from 70, you don't know how many more 12 days of Christmas you're going to have.
No one can turn it just ugly or darker than you. You're the Grinch. Yeah, that's how he fits well. There we go.
No, I'm not.
Now you're in the spirit.
Don't put that on me.
Look at that. There you are.
Don't put that on me.
Can we do the whole show like this? Can we do the whole show like this? It would be an improvement,
it's
right?
An improvement. It is an improvement.
You need to trim your eyebrows a little bit. Oh, baby.
You want festive?
Oh, festive, baby.
I don't have any decorations, but I do have this sweater, a gift from Rob Hyland, the Sunday Night Football producer, when we did Secret Santa a few years ago in the viewing room. We didn't hand out Secret Santa names this year unless I was bypassed.
No, we didn't.
Possible.
We didn't do it. Yeah, but that's, wow. That's, you know, good to get in the holiday spirit. That's one of those sweatshirts that's, it's ugly. I don't know what else to say, but good for you for wearing it on TV and showing.
It's ugly called sweater.
Ugly sweater. Is that
ugly
officially
sweater.
What they call it? But not bad.
Yeah. How old are you? How long have you been around? Are you aware of Christmas? It's funny. I just had a flashback.
Right.
I just had a flashback. I was getting on a plane 4, maybe 5 years ago, coming up for the weekend. And Wallace Shawn, do you know who Wallace Shawn is?
I do not.
With Wallace Shawn?
No.
He's the actor who uttered the line over and over again, inconceivable, in The Princess Bride. And he's the voice of the dinosaur in the Toy Story movies. And he's been in many other things over the years. Wallace Shawn, short, balding, very distinctive voice. Anyway, he's getting on the plane and he had somebody who's a fan who was like bothering him. And the topic of the ugly sweater came up and Wallace Shawn had no idea. Wallace Shawn is like Christopher David Sims. No idea of the ugly sweater phenomenon. It's a Christmas staple.
I mean, so, I did know it. I don't know. Yeah, I did.
Right.
I did know. Yes, I did. In fact, you're going to see me shortly here in the next few days with an ugly Christmas sweater on myself. So I was aware of it. But like when you said it, I was like, wait, is there something else I don't know about it? And I thought a little too analytically about it and went too deep into it to going like, is the actual brand name of the sweater ugly sweater? Like, that's what I was actually like going to. It's early in the morning. I'm sorry. I'm a little cloudy that way. Either way, thanks for cheering up a little bit, not being the Grinch, and your sweater is ugly. So welcome to the holiday
season. I was happy yesterday. I was happy yesterday. Farther down, there is a Vikings logo. There are three
Vikings
logos.
That's what I was going to ask. Okay, it's on there. Good.
They are on there. They are on there. So it's the shortest day of the year, too. I always think of that on December 21. That
they all get longer from here.
It's only
going to
get better from here.
Right, right.
It's only going to get better from here. This is where it bottoms out. Shortest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere for those of you who are listening in the Southern Hemisphere.
Cold as hell up
it's
here.
It's the longest day of the year. So enjoy. But yeah, it's cold here too. Oh, and we had a little furnace issue that I found out about just before bed. So there was no heat in our bedroom last night. So the dog was more than welcome to join us and provide a source of of a little extra supplemental heat.
Did you check the thermostat? Like, what did it say it was at? How cold did it get in the room last night on a night like last night? I mean, here last night it was like mid-20s and windy, right? So you could really feel, especially in my old farmhouse, I could kind of feel the air coming through the windows. I know you have a chateau, but, you know, like, what are we talking? What temperatures did it drop down to there?
Well, what happened was it was about 11:15, and my wife texted me a photo of the thermostat just outside the bedroom that was set on 71, but the temperature said 68, which alerted me to the fact that we had an issue with the furnace. And it's a boiler, and then there's an air system that pushes the air through the house. That, you know, it was like that when we got here, and I'm not going to completely rip out the heating system and put in a new one. So the boiler, which was just repaired yesterday, was not working. So actually, men are on the scene right now fixing it.
Wow.
Because, you know, well, it's red alert. It was, I don't know, I didn't check to see what the temperature was when I woke up, but I know this. It was cold. You know, once it was time to get out from under the blanket, and it was like, holy crap, it was like jumping into an ice bath. So, yeah, it was cold on that side of the house. So
all right, good.
Hopefully it'll get
good.
Fixed.
All right. Well, at least you had Macy up there to make you warm. That's
good. We got two systems, though, so this side of the house is fine.
Oh, okay, that's right. Cool. That's right. And, Deb, I mean, yeah, two systems. I mean, you're just giving us an inside look at the house. People there at the house already at 7:05. I mean, yeah, I mean, damn, when you're rich, they come in a hurry, don't they? They get there in a hurry like that. Boom, I need you now. The sun's not up. Get over here.
I'm just taking the inspiration that we both experienced in February in Indianapolis when we said to Dolphins coach Mike McDaniel, can't hide money, and his response right away was, not trying to.
He's so still not trying
kinda like
to.
I kind of like that.
All right.
Although, he does need – I watched Hard Knocks again.
Yeah.
He does need to like mix it up a little. Like every once in a while wear pants that actually make it down to his shoes. Like that can't be your thing.
He's cool, man.
Never wear pants. But you have to because it just becomes cliche if every single day of your life you wear a pair of pants that only make it halfway down your lower leg.
Well, when he's not in Miami,
a pair,
I'm guessing
goes all
he
the
will.
Way down.
When he gets out of Miami or it gets a little colder, I'm guessing we'll start to see full-fledged pants again. But, like, that's kind of the style right now, and he is in warm weather more times than not. So I get that. I hear you. You know, but I like it. Well, they don't have any late game. Do they play Baltimore in Baltimore next week? I'll be interested to see. I think that's in Baltimore. That'll be interesting to
see.
That's
a great point.
Right? What he'll be wearing.
Will
there.
He have his
right?
His short, kind of short pants on in Baltimore outdoors. But see, once you've gone all in, once you've fully committed to the bit, it's hard to change, because then what happens is you start getting grief from people. In last night's Hard Knocks, he was getting grief from somebody with the Jets that he needs to work on his calves. and so at some point when you start wearing normal pants, you're going to get grief for that too. So anyway, he is one of a kind. He makes Hard Knocks less boring. It would be more boring.
It's good.
There really isn't any. It's good, but it could be so much better. I don't want to sit here and be the, oh, it stinks. But when you watch it and you think, man, this really could be better. They really half of every episode is just a really deep dive look at the game.
And the game itself, right. It's
like
an old NFL films. And
right.
Is. You're right. I haven't seen every episode, but I think I've seen most of them. I caught up and yeah, you're right. It does seem like from the training camp ways, a little more game emphasis in this one where, yeah, you get the inside the behind the scenes type of look or whatever, but it is a little different. Enjoyable, though. It really is. And it's cool just because I think, you know, how good they are, right? The AFC is so up for grabs right now. We know that they're one of the top teams there. And I feel like it's rare we get an inside look of a team of this quality, you know, on this type of show. That's where I think it's maybe a little more interesting than years past.
Yeah, it was the Cardinals, then the Colts, and now it's the Dolphins, and it lasts as long as the Dolphins are alive. And, you know, it occurred to me last night at a time when folks are slapping on the tinfoil hats as it relates to all things gambling and bad calls and good calls and this and that. I'm surprised And I won't be surprised. I won't be surprised is a better way to put it. If the Dolphins get some very favorable call go their way that screws their opponent in the postseason and they advance, someone's going to say, oh, they just want to have another episode of Hard Knocks. That's why the NFL did that. The NFL wants them to keep playing because the NFL wants to keep milking this Hard Knocks cow for as long as it can. Although, again, I don't think that would be the case, but I do think that there would be people who believe that. And by the way, I do need to take issue before we move on.
Yeah, take some issue.
I don't know how
issue.
I've been typecast as the Grinch.
Right.
How have I been typecast as the Grinch? How has that happened? I love Christmas. No one there knows whether I love Christmas or don't love Christmas. The fact that I wore this thing today for you should be proof that I love Christmas. I love Christmas. It's the best day of the year.
Right.
It was a magical time when I was a kid. It's a magical time now. Everybody is nicer in December. Look, there I am getting my Vikings jacket.
Right. Well, I mean, you're even kind of mad saying this right now. So that's kind of Grinch-like. Like, you're kind of mad as you're saying it.
No, it's not.
Then you just a second ago, you were like, well, I don't want to, you know, crap all over the Hard Knock show and go down that route, right? So you have a little tendency to go. You have a little tendency to go a little negative every now and then. So therefore,
I have no negativity about Christmas.
No,
only
I know that.
No negativity.
We know you don't. Okay. You're enjoying Christmas, but we're still going to give you a hard time. You're Dr. Doom, so Dr. Doom can't become freaking Santa Claus when it comes Christmas time. We got to keep you in character. All right. So you go from Dr. Doom, it becomes the holiday season. You become the Grinch. There you go. Boom. Right on the money. And you want to talk like, hey, we want to talk about calf work and all that with Mike McDaniel. I mean, we've seen your legs. We've seen your legs. You might be wearing shorts right now. So this is something that I'm not sure. Whoa, there they are. I don't know. When's the last time you've had some calf work?
You know
I'm
what?
Not sure.
You know what?
What?
You know what?
What?
I'm wearing the exact same shorts right now. The exact same shorts. Let me tell you something. The control room is on it.
We are on you.
The control room is on it right now.
Yeah, we're on
My
you.
God.
All
That's
things
well done.
You, we're on it.
Yeah. All right. Well
All right,
done.
Well, we
I'm
got a good game tonight. You can't
tonight.
Go Grinch on the game tonight. It's a good one. You're going to have to talk all excited about it and everything. Look at this.
Our favorite quarterback, Derek Carr, is playing tonight.
That's right. Your favorite quarterback. He's not following you on social media again yet, is he? He's still not happening?
He's blocked me. You can't follow
you.
Somebody you've blocked.
He blocked you. I'm sorry. Right. I have my facts mixed up.
He blocked me, and I've been blocked by various athletes over the years because they can't handle the truth. I don't even know what I said about Derek Carr to get him to block me. Now, once I realized he blocked me, I started saying some things. But I have no idea. I have no idea what I said for him to block me. It was as weird as like when Ben Roethlisberger blocked me. But Ben Roethlisberger like blocked everyone. Like he just thought when in Rome. And they blamed it on whoever was running his social media account. And it was just blocking everybody. Like it just made no sense. Like you had to be in a very – like how did – like with my son was blocked. And he's like, I've never even mentioned the guy in my life. How did I get blocked? Like, everybody was blocked. Like, they flipped a switch where everyone was blocked, and then they decided who not to block. So, anyway. Yeah, Derek Carr's blocked me. Matthew Stafford, as far as I know, has not blocked me, although I don't know if he's on Twitter or not. But remember, we have established that there is an Instagram post out there that his wife made while they were on their way to their honeymoon. And Matthew has PFT on his phone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he's
she wasn't happy.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Old habits die hard.
Right.
He's married, is on his way to his honeymoon, and he's checking PFT.
He wants to know what's going on, you know. And yeah, Stafford, without a doubt, he pays attention to PFT and what's going on there. Most veteran players do. Most veteran players, the young ones don't know about it, but as you get up there in years and you're around the NFL facility as much, where you have made, you know, a name for yourself, really, is you're the go-to spot for coaches to let me look and just see what's going on in the NFL in a quick, condensed way. I don't need every story about every team, but I have a good feel. And the veteran player, you know, you go in to see your quarterback coach and, oh, hey, he's looking at PFT. Well, what's that you're looking at? Oh, this is what I always look at. That's kind of what happens. And that's really where you kind of take fire in an NFL locker room. It's with the older players more times than not.
Ryan Fitzpatrick once found out he was traded on PFT.
Right. I remember hearing that story.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, yeah. I remember that.
He told me. He told me, hey, I need to tell you. Like the first time I ever talked to him, hey, I need to tell you something. When I got traded, and I think it was Rams to the Bengals.
Yeah.
When I got traded, they never told me. I saw it on PFT.
That's like, amazing. Well,
I didn't know what
amazing.
To say to that.
Right.
Like, it's not my fault they didn't tell you.
Right.
So, and I'm told, sources close to me tell me that Derek Carr has not yet blocked you. So my goal for the balance of this segment will be to get Derek Carr to block you. I need you to say something. I'm going to get you to say something that Derek Carr will block you for. And hopefully it'll be something that you make the comment and I can take it out of context and put it on Twitter. And
yeah.
Out of context, it sounds horrible.
Right.
That's right. So that's what I'm hoping for. I want you to say just one, like, and maybe we can just splice together something. We'll make something up and we'll put it on Twitter and see if Derek Carr blocks you. That'd be a fun experiment.
We'll see if he can do it. The only negative thing I'll say about Derek Carr, I do wonder whether he's dyeing his hair and his beard. That is my
biggest. That's enough for him to block you.
That might be. I think it's a fair question, but
he's dyeing them different colors.
Right, right.
The hair is black and the beard is kind of
red tint or
auburn.
Yeah, right.
Auburn.
Right.
Chestnut. Yeah. The hair and the beard are different colors. And I do think the shoe polish has made its way into the mix. It's okay, Derek. You will die one day. You will get old if you're lucky. Just embrace it and own it like I have. One thing that's amazing to me, let me tell you something.
Grinch.
I noticed
this
last night. I'll tell you one more thing.
Yeah.
The lighting up here makes my hair look mainly black. The lighting in my office when I do PFTPM, there ain't no black to be seen.
Yeah.
Like, it's all shiny gray. It's like I got two different wigs I wear. The upstairs wig and the downstairs wig. One is black and one is gray.
Yes.
Anyway, Derek, it's okay to have some gray hair. It's okay. It'll make you look distinguished. It'll make you more of a leader. Maybe they'll be more likely to listen to you and follow you the way that you want them to if you let some of that gray out and wash out the black. All right. Maybe that's enough to get Chris blocked. I'm trying to
Yeah, you're doing it
Saints
for
and
me.
Rams, both are 7-7. Both are alive for a wild card. Saints got the two-way path to the playoffs. They're knotted up with the Buccaneers, who they host next week for the NFC South Championship, and they're in the mix with the other 7-7 teams, either currently holding 6-7, Vikings and Rams respectively, or along with the Seahawks in the hunt. There's the Falcons and Packers at 6-8 still on the in the hunt column. So the Saints have two ways to get in, and it would help to win tonight. And it would help the Rams to win tonight. And they're playing at SoFi Stadium. And I like this because this is an old NFC West rivalry.
Yeah.
The first time the Saints ever won a playoff game. Playoffs. Against the Rams in 2000.
They were the St. Louis Rams, right?
Rams in 2000.
Yep, right.
Exactly.
Right.
But that was the first time they upset the greatest show-offs on turf in 2000. The one year they didn't go to the Super Bowl from 1999 to 2001, wild card loss to the New Orleans Saints in 2000. The Saints would go on to Minnesota next week and get splattered by the Vikings 1 week before the Vikings would go to the Meadowlands and lose
41-0. Booyah. That's right. Take that ugly sweater.
Jason Garrett was on that team, that Giants team.
He was. So we'll gang up on you and remind you of that a little bit this weekend to have some fun. But, yeah, it is. It's old school.
Okay.
NFC West. I mean, I grew up with, Jim Everett, Bobby Hebert, right? Playing in some big games late 80s, early 90s, certainly. And there's some good teams, of course, with that Saints defense and Pat Swilling and Sam Mills and, Flipper Anderson
Ronaldo
and
Turnbull.
Henry Ellard.
Do you remember?
What's that?
Do you remember Ronaldo Turnbull, West Virginia great?
Yeah.
He was a beast for the Saints defense in the late 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
A beast.
They had a lot of beasts. They were definitely one of the defenses that when my dad played, I definitely had a more sense of fear than I did against other teams. The Eagles, that Saints pass rush, even the Vikings with Dolman and Millard, right? Chris Millard.
Randall.
Yeah, right. Those were
Henry Thomas
some defenses
for a while.
As a son of a father that's playing, quarterback for a football team. They made you scared a little bit sitting in the stands watching the game.
Keith Millard tore an ACL in 1990, opened the door for an undrafted free agent from Texas A&I named John Randall that nobody wanted because he was undersized. And that was the start of John Randall's Hall of Fame career. Undrafted when they had 12 rounds, not just 7 rounds. That was John Randall. Okay, so tonight, Rams. Oh, and I don't know if you saw this. They asked Cooper Kupp about playing on turf twice in 5 days because it was SoFi Stadium Sunday against the Commanders.
Yeah.
SoFi Stadium Thursday night. I hate it. I'm still waiting for one player, one current player. Former players don't count. Former players don't count because they're writing checks that they don't have to cash.
Right.
You know, when Eli Manning says it's fine, Eli Manning's on the payroll in a variety of ways.
Right.
He still works for the Giants.
That's right.
He's working for ESPN, which is kind of indirectly on the payroll. I didn't get that memo as an employee of NBC. But former players don't count. Current players count, and there's yet to be a single one that has said, you know what, I prefer turf. It even though I can't get out of bed the next day, I'm faster when I run on it. No one said that.
Yeah.
It's all players saying, we don't want to do it. So here we are, SoFi Stadium, turf. The Rams are there Sunday and then again today. And the Saints have just been there for the past few games. They were at home on turf on Sunday against, I can't even remember who they beat on Sunday, frankly. Who did they beat on Sunday?
They beat the Giants.
Already, it's
Tommy
it's already
DeVito.
Faded out of my memory. Oh, the Giants.
Right.
Oh, and Pete's like, The New York Giants.
Yeah, every time they sack Tommy DeVito, they did this to rub it in our face there a little bit. So, that's what we had to deal with. But they got a different challenge tonight, the New Orleans Saints defense. That's for sure. I mean, the Rams are arguably the hottest offense in football right now. They're right up there. Hottest offense in football, not named the 49ers, right? Let's put it that way because we know the 49ers are in another stratosphere. But – you know, you've heard me talk about this a little bit lately. This is not news to anybody that's paying attention, really. But the Rams, I think the first thing is that, their ability to run the ball. Their ability to run the ball over the last 5 or 6 weeks, again, I would say, is second to no one in football except for the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, they are moving people. It's as good as I've seen the run game for a Sean McVay football team ever in his era here as the Rams head coach. Their O-line is well coached. There's a little more creativity than there used to be in the run game altogether. And this Kyren Williams, he's shown me something that I knew he was good, and I knew he was good at Notre Dame, but he's on another level that I guess I didn't expect or didn't think he was going to be capable of in the NFL. I mean, you'll see tonight, there's no fear in Kyren Williams. He kind of has that 49er attitude that we talk about so much, where it's like, what, run through the wall? No problem. There is no fear or hesitation in his football game. Mike, you couple that with the Saints, who can't stop the run. They're not very good at that. They play man-to-man a lot against Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua and McVay's ability to design plays. And then, you know, you can't sack Matt Stafford right now. Pass protection, his ability to get it out is top-notch. And the Saints, they don't get after the quarterback. They can't get sacks. So that's where that side of the ball certainly could give us some fireworks, and it's going to be interesting to see what the Saints do to stop this hot Rams offense right now.
Kyren Williams, despite missing 4 games, is 4th in the NFL in rushing with 953 yards.
Right?
He's averaging 95.3 yards per game. That leads the league among all running backs. We think of the Rams as a passing team, and they've defied that. And the offensive line, see, that's what happens. When an offense is bad, oh, the offensive line sucks. When an offense is good, hey, that running back's really something. Hey, Matthew Stafford is throwing dot, dot, dots. It's not, man, the offensive line is really blocking well. Why would anyone want to be an offensive lineman?
Think about that. I know.
Things go well, you get no credit. When things go poorly, you get all the blame.
Yeah. No, it's the selfless duty, you know, of an offensive lineman. You don't get any credit, really, for the most part, when you're really playing well. But when you're not playing well, man, everybody in the universe craps on you and tells you how bad you are. It is. It's unfortunate. But they're built for it. That's why they're like pack herd animals, like you've heard me say. They're cows in the corner of the pasture there, right? They're just said, nobody likes us, moo. Nobody likes us, moo, right? You know, but we're going to move these people out of the way, make a hole for our people. That's how they are. And their ability to block out noise like that was always impressive in any locker room I was ever in. But, yeah, this is a group here that it's some turnaround with what they got going right now. You know, early in the year, it was dicey. You know, Stafford was getting hit a lot. You know, the running game was certainly not like what it is right now. I think if we probably broke it down over the last 4 or 5 weeks and what Kyren Williams has done, I would bet you he blows everybody out of the water as far as what he's doing in rushing yards and all that. I think the early season stats probably skew that and make it lower than it actually what the reality is of how good they are right now. But you couple that run game right now, the Saints having to worry about that, Mike, and then having to worry about, as we know, McVay's ability to package plays together off the motion, the run game, you know, the little option routes that Cooper Kupp or Puka Nacua can run. And then when you overplay those a little bit, that's when they hit you behind with the other one. Cooper Kupp runs the option route. Puka Nacua is running deep. They kind of use them against each other. Oh, Puka Nacua runs the option route. Cooper Kupp runs deep. They got it going right now. And as we've been talking about for the last 2 weeks, like a dangerous team, if they can get in the NFC playoffs, that really could upset the apple cart in a big way.
Dear listener, please close your eyes for this movie theater meditation brought to you by Fandango. Breathe in. Smell the fresh popcorn. Now exhale. Open your eyes and proceed to the best seats in the house you reserved on Fandango. Recline. Now, download the free Fandango app for movie times, tickets, and seats at your favorite theaters. Fandango. It's your ticket to the movies.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. This summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
To satisfy your curiosity regarding Kyren Williams, yeah. In his last game before missing more than a month due to injury, he had 158 rushing yards against the Cardinals on 20 carries, 7.9 yards per attempt. That was October 15. Okay. He next played on November 26, also against the Cardinals. In that game, he had 143 on only 16 carries, 8.9 yards per attempt. Crazy. He averaged 1 yard more in his return game against the Cardinals than in his exit game against the Cardinals. Since then, 88 yards on 21 carries in the win over the Browns, 114 in the overtime loss to the Ravens, and 152 against the Commanders this past weekend. So he has been on a tear. He only had one 100-yard game, 103 in the overtime win in Indianapolis back in early October. He's had 100-yard games, 4 out of the last 5 appearances, with 88 in the game against the Browns. And that's the best defense in the NFL, and he still gained 88 yards
yes.
against the Cleveland Browns.
Right. They put up 30-something points against the best defense in football. You know, they put up 31 points and ran the ball down the Ravens' throat. Like, not like tricks, not like reverses and, you know, let's do this and do that. They literally, remember the game? We were sitting there going, is this like opposites day? I mean, the Rams on the first drive of the game, I think, ran the ball like 11 straight times, 9 straight times. I know I'm probably getting my facts a little mixed up there, but it was something like that. I think I've never seen McVay do that. So there's a new wrinkle or you know, what do I want to say? Just a start-off point for this offense that we haven't seen in the McVay era. And I think it makes it dangerous. It does. With Stafford's ability, as we know, to throw the ball down the field right now, you got to go, wow, we got to overplay the run. We got to crowd the line of scrimmage. And then, of course, they got some weapons and a quarterback that's still got one of the most special arms in football to strike downfield like no other. And that's where, you know, the game could be fun tonight. It could be exciting that way with some big plays just because of that matchup, let alone the other side of the ball that we'll get to in a second.
One last point on Kyren Williams. Over the last 4 weeks, 497 rushing yards. That leads the NFL.
Christian McCaffrey
is second with 467. Right. Nobody else is above 400. Now, Kyren Williams, not a rookie. Puka Nacua, you mentioned him earlier.
Yeah.
And my son and I have been having some conversations about what happens if C.J. Stroud
doesn't play again this year. And I don't know when he's going to be back from the concussion he suffered against the Jets. We showed yesterday video of a hit he took against the Broncos that sure looked like he should have been shut down for the day because he had ataxia, as a layperson would assess it, wobbly, struggling. The NFL requires a player to be taken out of the game. He has light sensitivity now, reportedly. If he doesn't play again, who's the offensive rookie of the year? Has Stroud done enough? Is the hay in the barn on him? Is Puka in this? Is Sam Laporta in it? A tight end has never won it. My son is all Team Laporta. Tight end has never been the offensive rookie of the year. I don't know. You know, we get so caught up in MVP. There's some other pretty compelling races for the individual awards out there. I don't know who the offensive rookie of the year is right now because I had just assumed it was Stroud. And now if Stroud's not playing, there's an opening for some late season heroics, big games, big moments, memorable plays for Puka Nacua, Sam Laporta, whoever else may be out there in the mix. I'm sure I'm missing somebody, but Nacua and Laporta are the two that are most prominent for me,
I think,
as
so.
The alternative to C.J. Stroud.
I don't think you're missing anybody else. I mean, there's the Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs up in Detroit, you know, but I don't – yeah.
Gibbs,
not,
maybe. Robinson, right. Robinson hasn't been used enough.
No.
They don't give Robinson enough chances.
No.
He could have been.
Great.
He could have been.
Right.
But you use the 8th overall pick on the guy, you don't freaking use him.
Yeah. No, I think we've hit the names there. I'm trying to just rack my brain here and think if there's anybody else we're missing, but I don't think so. And I think when you just talk about it, like, hey, C.J. Stroud obviously was in the leader house. We know that. But if he, you know, doesn't play again this weekend and coach gets off or maybe just ends the season on a little bit of a blah note. And then, you know, again, Puka Nacua, he dominated the news cycle for about the first 5 or 6 weeks of the year. We can't forget about that. He was record-breaking, doing stuff, things that were unbelievable. And then C.J. Stroud, you know, kind of overtook him in that talk. Cooper Kupp got healthy and kind of put Puka Nacua back as the second option of the Rams. But I think that, you know, if C.J. Stroud ends on a kind of a blah note and Puka Nacua continues to do what he's been doing and goes off tonight on a national audience and has a big game here. I mean, we're sitting here right now with 87 receptions, 1,163 yards, 4 touchdowns. You know, he's got a chance to end up with 1,500 yards maybe in the year, 1,600 yards, you know, maybe a few other touchdowns. Yeah, I think he would be the next guy I would look at other than C.J. Stroud. It would go to Puka Nacua for what he did, holding down the fort for this team, why Cooper was hurt, and, of course, how he's played when Cooper got back in the mix has all been impressive.
That's the key. I mean, when Cooper Kupp wasn't available, it's Nacua, and then when Cooper comes back, Puka's still a key piece of that offense. He's had some great catches. He's played through some injury. The guy's incredible. And he was a bargain. Fifth round pick, I think, from Brigham Young. Fifth rounder?
Yeah.
Fourth rounder? Low rounder. Not an obvious no-brainer. This guy needs to be drafted high. He's going to be great. He was indeed a fifth rounder. Okay. He's on pace for 1,412 yards, by the way. That would be second most in the Super Bowl era for a rookie behind Jamar Chase's 1,455 in his rookie season. I thought Randy Moss had a lot of yards. Maybe he was in the 1,300s. He had like 17, 18 touchdowns back in 1998. All right, and he was the offensive rookie of the year that way, too. Pete says the DraftKings Sportsbook odds for C.J. Stroud to win offensive rookie of the year are minus 10,000. That would seem to be a lock. But my point is this. If Stroud doesn't play again this year, and we don't know. We got 3 games left, and it's not looking like he's going to play this week. And you know, when you've got these lingering concussion issues, you either clear up right away or, like, who knows when you're able to come back. We had some extended absences. Hayden Hurst had a concussion that I think they, you know, the spotters missed the opportunity to pull him out of the game. He hasn't played since, and that was over a month ago. So who knows when we'll see C.J. Stroud. But if he doesn't play again, it opens the door for Nacua, opens the door for Laporta, I think. But what do I know other than the fact that you and I have one of the votes? All right. Injuries tonight hurt the Rams more than the – or no, excuse me. Let me rephrase that. Hurt the Saints more than the Rams.
Definitely.
We have the graphic. Ryan Ramczyk is out for the Saints. Isaiah Foskey is out for the Saints. Peyton Turner.
Yeah.
Lonnie Johnson. Kendra Miller all out for the Saints. The good news is Chris Olave, ankle, missed Sunday's game, will play Thursday night. There's just a couple – of Rams on that list. Travis Tomlinson is out. Joe Noteboom is questionable with a foot injury. So that's where we are for the injuries for tonight. And, you know, again, the Saints need all the help they can get in this one. The Saints, you know, it's impressive they're 7-7. If they somehow win this game, I'll view the Saints very differently. Do I view the Saints as just good enough to barely miss the playoffs? That's my perception.
Yeah, I feel you there. I think I have a similar feeling that way as well. But you know, a good game plan tonight, you know, a turnover. Maybe the Saints are a little more aggressive throwing the football, make a few big plays, right? I mean, I certainly wouldn't be shocked if we were sitting here going, wow, they made it into the playoffs still, right? But yeah, I think they're one of those teams that they leave a little bit of a bad taste on in your mouth on the offensive side of the ball. We've said that all year. It seems like they have better talent than what they kind of show on that side of the ball throughout the year as far as explosive plays, right, consistency moving the ball. It's just been ugly that way, right? And they're not a very good running football team. Now, they stay consistent with the run. They're patient with it, but they're not really a good running football team. And then, you know, passing the football, they have potential. But as we know, and, you know, kind of been a hot-button topic is – you know, the aggressiveness of the passing game. You know, one, it's not naturally within that offense. Two, I don't think it's naturally within Derek Carr, right? So, you know, that's where it's going to be interesting tonight. The Rams defense is solid but not special. It's really well coached, but they are pretty big up front. They should be able to hold down the run a little bit, you know, with their front and especially the lack of, you know, sexiness or explosiveness in the Saints run game. And I think that bodes well for the Rams and the fact that they can, as we always say, or as I always say, they can put more, you know, one more egg in the let's stop the passing game. And that's, I think, fits Raheem Morris. And Raheem Morris, when I think about this too, right, this is a typical old school West Coast offense that Raheem Morris has grown up with. I mean, he grew up defending John Gruden in practice with Mike Tomlin and that crew there. You know, we know John Gruden went to the Saints and helped them out in the summer. Like, Raheem Morris is going to have a good feel for some of the things that this system does on a play-by-play basis. So, yeah, I give the advantage to the Rams in this matchup. Not by a lot, certainly, but by the fact that they're home and the way they're playing right now, yeah, they're a little hotter than the New Orleans Saints. And, yeah, I got, you know, the Saints are a little all over the place at times. Even last week, I know they scored 30 points, but it wasn't easy, and it was ugly, and they really had to play kind of a field position game against the New York Giants. And, you know, that's the thing that's kind of, you know, leaves you wanting more when you watch Derek Carr in the Saints offense right now.
Rams are 4-1 in the last five games. The only loss was that overtime thriller against the Ravens. Both teams control their playoff density, as George McFly once said. By the way, Back to the Future, streaming on Peacock. One of the perks, if you sign up for Peacock, to watch the exclusive holiday back end of the doubleheader game, Bills and Chargers. Lorraine, my density has brought me to you. The playoff destiny is controlled by both the Rams and the Saints. But check out these next-gen stats odds. I feel like we need to bring in Steve Kornacki for this. The Rams, if they win tonight, have a 74% chance of making it to the playoffs.
Right.
If they lose, it drops to 15%. The Saints have a 71% chance of making it to the playoffs with a win tonight. If they lose, it drops to 24%. Now, sometimes my mindset slips into that spot where, number one, how do they even know what these numbers are? And number two, why do we even care? Let's just watch the games play out. But sometimes it's jarring when you see what one loss is going to do to a team's chances in a loose general sense. Whoever loses tonight is kind of screwed. Whoever wins tonight is in pretty good position. It's not quite a de facto playoff game, but boy, when you see how much those numbers change, it gives you an idea of the stakes tonight. If you lose this one, you got an uphill climb to get in. If you win this one, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I hear that. But I kind of lean on your first point. There's still football to be played. You know, the New Orleans Saints, the NFC South, like, I mean, come on. That's totally up for grabs still. The New Orleans Saints have other avenues to get in here. They could be the 7 seed. They could be the 4 seed. I mean, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers can certainly lose to the Jags this weekend. and the Saints could lose tonight, and we're still sitting there going, "Oh, they're tied at the top of the division." So, you know, yeah, I don't think this is end all be all here. We know it's a big game; they need to win. The win, as you know, as we're talking about, just gives them more flexibility too if they don't win the division to be the 6 or 7 seed. But there's a lot of football left to be played here, certainly. And, you know, they're going to get a crack at Tampa Bay next week, too. So that's where I just, you know, I don't understand the low percentages maybe behind that if they lose, you know, on tonight. But big game, nonetheless. Certainly playoff implications.
I just hope.
Yeah.
I hope like hell we don't have to go 5 tiebreakers deep if the Bucs and the Saints have the same record in the NFC South like we're going to have to do if the Eagles and the Cowboys both win out. 5 tiebreakers deep. We talked about that yesterday. Strength of victory right now heavily favoring the Eagles. So all the Eagles have to do is beat the Giants, Cardinals, and Giants, and it looks like they'll be the NFC East champions. And speaking of the Eagles, a little old business to get to.
Oh, okay.
We talked on Tuesday when Chris was in his hammock with his pina colada outdoors, even though it's kind of cold in December. Miles Simmons and I focused on the ill-advised deep throw on 1st and 10 from the Philadelphia 45 with 13 seconds left, 2 timeouts. They needed 15 yards for a 58-yard field goal, 20 yards for a 53-yarder, 25 yards for a 48-yarder. They ignored that and fired it deep. And then Chris and I talked yesterday, and Chris had some insight from just the overall play design and the read. And, you know, Julian Love makes a hell of a play on the ball, and it was underthrown and yada, yada. So yesterday, Nick Sirianni, kind of feisty in his press conference, kind of feeling the pressure a little bit after 3 straight losses, kind of unlike him when you see it, when you watch it, a little snippy with the reporters. He was eventually asked, why take that shot down the field when you're not far out of long field goal range with 13 seconds to play? Here's what Sirianni had to say.
At times there, Tim, you know, we've seen you know, you can get a pass interference there. You get a pass, and you know, it was what it was on that particular play. But you can, if you get a pass interference call there, and if a team's giving you a one-on-one shot for, you know, very similar to what happened on the other side of the ball, they ended up getting a one-on-one shot that you know, had some different things there. And we've seen it. We had one-on-one shot against the Rams, and you can get a pass interference, and now you're in position to kick it. Not only could you get a pass interference, also AJ has a tremendous ability to come down with the football in one-on-one situations. And you know what? In this particular case, it didn't work out. But you know, we're comfortable with what was called and what we did in that scenario. And you know, we'll be better next time because of it.
I don't know if you noticed it, Christopher, but about halfway through that explanation, Nick Sirianni did the neck scratch that sells to me the idea of, I probably shouldn't be saying this out loud. I probably shouldn't be trying to suggest that we had a strategic component to this play where we thought we're going to get a pass interference call. I've never heard anyone articulate that as a reason for doing something. It is too amorphous. It is too unpredictable. We might get you might get a pass interference call. You always might get a pass interference call. You're not calling a play, are you, with the goal of getting a pass interference? I've never seen that happen. And if it has, they've never come out and talked about it. And I think when he did this, he's kind of like, I'm going to go through some things here for saying this out loud.
Well, I think it was part of the overall calculation of why you do it. Like, I don't think it's pass interference. Let's call this play just so we can get pass interference. It's let's call this play. He's one-on-one. He's a superstar. We are the Eagles. We've done really well in this department throwing go routes to A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith, right? He's a special football player. Let's see what happens, and maybe we get pass interference, you know? Now, I'm with you in the fact scratching the neck and uncomfortable and all that. Yeah, he's feeling the pressure. Of course they are. I mean, of course they are. We know that. It's the freaking Philadelphia Eagles, right? I still think most people in football would sit here and look at it and go, it might be the most talented roster in the game. You know, if it's not, it's only second to the 49ers, and they've lost 3 games in a row and really probably should have lost 4 in a row, really. So that's where, you know, I think he's feeling the pressure, right? Now, you know, the play call itself, okay? Hey, ego, cockiness of the Eagles, sure, whatever you want to say. You know, I get that, and I think it's fair to question that. But that's what's got them where they are. I mean, that's what got them to the Super Bowl last year. They're an aggressive, they put the pressure on you type of football team. And, you know, they don't, if you're going to play man-to-man on A.J. Brown, they're going to throw it up to A.J. Brown because they go, that's advantage us. Now, like, the thing is, yeah, you know, is it the safe play? Obviously not. There's some risk there. But at the same time, right, I don't have a problem with the call. And let's just make sure we're clear here. It was there. It was there for a touchdown. It should have. It was wide open. It was the right call. It was a bad throw, really. A bad throw that took a long time to get there, floated in the air, and was, you know, a little too slow or long to get to the target, and Julian Love was allowed to read it. So that's the big thing. But like we said yesterday when we looked back at this play, right? I mean, it's 8 to 10 yards underthrown, and it was there, and that's where I'm not going to fault the Eagles too much here for the play call. You know, I'm not. I still think
now. Hang on,
Yeah.
Time out.
Yeah,
I'm calling time out.
Yeah,
because you get the pass interference call if it's deliberately underthrown, and what Sirianni's comment would suggest,
okay,
is it was deliberately underthrown. Because how many times have we seen guy slams on the brakes to catch an underthrown ball, and the defensive back takes him out, and you get the flag? And I think that is the next question that didn't get asked. And this is a problem with a press conference. A press conference is everybody shows up with their own questions they came up with that are going to really be, you know, great. And I'm trying not to be a jerk here. I've been in this setting. You've got your questions you want to ask, and it ricochets from topic to topic. There isn't good follow-up. In fact, the question that was posed to Sirianni was two questions. It started with, was A.J. Brown the primary read, before it became, why take a shot downfield? I'd love to know the answer to the question, was A.J. Brown the primary read? And I'd love to know and have a chance to ask, was he supposed to underthrow it there? Was that the play?
No, there's no.
Because you're not going to draw pass interference. But how are you going to draw pass interference?
Well, they're just hoping it naturally happens within the play itself. Like, if it is underthrown or something else, they're just saying. They're saying that's part of the calculation of why they did it. It is that absolutely, as I explained to you yesterday, and we watched the replay of that play, it was the number one read. That's why they called that play. Like I told you, they called an out and up for specifically to go, hey, if it's one-on-one, we want you to throw the out and up to our superstar best player on our offense, right? And that's why. And I just think that is the reason they call it, is they like the matchup, and they're going, the Eagles were playing to take away the middle of the field, the Seahawks, because the Eagles had timeout, so they knew that was part of the attack, and they took a calculated risk shot to one of the best jump ball receivers in football over the last few years. I don't think it's a deliberately underthrown, let's try to get a pass interference thing. No, it was just a bad throw. It was a bad throw. It was a little too telegraphed, and Julian Love got a jump on it, and that's where it went from there. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, that's not necessarily a horrible call or thought by them. It's not, you know. But at the same time, you know, I understand there's a less risky avenue they could have taken, certainly, to tie it up, and you feel like they were probably the better team on the field, and the longer the game plays out, the better team usually wins, and that would be the Eagles. And I think that's why we're sitting here kind of questioning it all together.
You wonder if behind the scenes Sirianni is saying essentially what you're saying, and maybe even more pointed. I'm gonna try to summarize what you're saying here. The ball was underthrown, and it took too long for the ball to get there.
Yes.
And if the play failed, it was on number one, Jalen Hurts, for not getting the ball out faster and not hanging it up there longer to give A.J. Brown a chance to run under it, catch it, and score the game-winning touchdown.
Agreed.
With a better throw, that's a game-winning touchdown. That's your point.
That's my point, 100%. It would be just like what like Nick Sirianni said. It had been just like what the Seahawks did to the Eagles. They got one-on-one. How dare you're doing this? We like our playmakers. We're going to take a shot, right? No, but it's this continuing We're going to blame Nick Sirianni in this blind spot by the Eagles fans and people that they just can't ever blame the guy that's on the screen here. He escapes criticism almost always, and it's unbelievable. The people on ESPN, they're going to make excuses and do all of that. You know, they're going to have a 30-minute special on Josh Allen turnovers with a B-minus football team, and then it's Jalen Hurts has got as many turnovers as he does with an all-star team, and that's not a problem, and they won't break it down. He's like the Teflon Don in a lot of ways. You can't ever say anything bad about him, and if you do, you get attacked mercilessly. So it's crazy that way. But, yes, it was on him.
Mercilessly.
Right. I'll get it right one of these days. But, yeah, it's on him. They dropped the ball, the Eagles, on the offensive side of the ball. The offense failed them the other night. The defense played good enough to win. The Seattle Seahawks defense sucks. And the most talented offense in football scored 17 freaking points. And the quarterback threw two horrible interceptions. That goes on Jalen Hurts and the offense. So that's just the facts of the matter. And it's amazing how the excuses that constantly got to get made up for the player at times. And it drives me crazy, as you know.
Wouldn't it be funny if we could just swap Jalen Hurts to the Bills for Josh Allen to the Eagles and see how it would go? I don't want to get you down that rabbit hole. Just something for people to think about. I want to let you hear a little more Nick Sirianni.
Okay.
Here he is, asked a very significant question, because they made the coaching change on the defensive side of the ball. Sean Desai exiled to the booth. Matt Patricia now the de facto defensive coordinator. Why make the coaching change at defensive coordinator? Why not make the coaching change at offensive coordinator with Brian Johnson? Here's Sirianni's response.
You know, make no mistake about it, like, this offense is being run the exact same way the offense was run last year and the year before that. This offense is my offense, right? This is my offense. And so the criticism on the offense, like, I think unfairly goes to Brian calls the plays. It unfairly goes to Brian. The criticism on this offense should come at me. But make no mistake about it, this offense has been consistently similar throughout the 3 years. Yes, there's different things you do based off your personnel and different things you do based off the teams that you're playing and what's working for you. But again, it all starts there with me. And so I guess I would, I'm not thinking that a change needs to be made there for multiple reasons, and that's one big one.
Well, and look, I'm not suggesting that he's lying when he says that, but the last thing he wants anyone to believe is that Shane Steichen, the offensive coordinator last year, was more responsible for the success of the team than the head coach was. Because
that.
If you start down this path,
yeah.
If you start saying anything other than it's me, it's my offense, people are going to say, well, wait a minute. Maybe it would have been better if you'd have gone to coach the Colts and we would have just promoted Shane Steichen to head coach if he's the guy who was making this offense as special as it was last year. So that's dangerous territory for Nick Sirianni, because he quickly talks himself into a spot where people are saying, well, maybe we should get Shane Steichen back.
Yeah, it's I 100% agree with you there, right? And, you know, he could say what he wants, but Shane Steichen's a special brain, a special offensive game plan designer. He's really good that way. Now, like, break it down a little bit here. Hey, the defensive side, why they make the change with Sean Desai and all that too. I don't think they ever really thought or wanted to make Sean Desai the defensive coordinator, right? You know, there's that thought out there. And, you know, there's some people in the know that certainly have led me to believe that way. You know, and there's the thought out there that really they wanted Fangio, right? And then Fangio, you know, Nick Gannon was there. And then Fangio signed with the Dolphins, and then Gannon left. And then the Eagles were like, oh, no, who's our D coordinator? So I don't think, like, Sean Desai was candidate number one to be the guy. The organization was sold on it. So I think that allows them to make the move a little bit. On the other side, they knew Shane Steichen was leaving. They knew he was gone before the end of the year, no matter what. Brian Johnson was always the plan, the guy to take over and be that guy. So I think they're comfortable with that, with their offseason and how they plan that whole thing out altogether. You know, you say the right things too, right? I mean, you're right. He's got to be careful there. He can't give too much credit to Shane Steichen. Everyone's going to be like, why did we let him go and why did we keep you? There's no doubt about that. The offense isn't necessarily so much different, right? But like you hear me say all the time, it's how it's packaged. It's how it's put together. It's the sequencing of how you run plays. That's where Shane Steichen was really special. And that's where I think Brian Johnson is not quite on that level yet as far as figuring out how to package things together, how to make one play look the same, you know, or two plays look the same, but they're really different, right? The smoke and mirrors of, hey, look over here, but we're going to do that. That's where Shane Steichen's special, and I think that's where, you know, again, they're finding their way with this new offensive coordinator, and maybe Nick Sirianni's got to get even involved more in helping out in that department. We'll see where it goes, but it's disappointing nonetheless. That offense, the best O-line in football, right? And you've heard me say they've only got like two or three runs. There needs to be more there. And then those two receivers, which you could argue is definitely top two or three duos in the NFL, right? Good running backs, damn good tight end. There's no way this offense should be playing the way they've played the last 4 to 5 weeks. There's no way. And that's definitely a concern as we get close to the playoffs.
We need to take a break soon. I say that as a preface to the fact that I'm not going to take one yet, because we need to hear and witness how this stress of the Eagles all of a sudden not having things come so easily. They went from 10-1, running the show. Those Eagles fans that are crazed for another Super Bowl, winning one in 2017 just made them even more determined to get another one. Here's Nick Sirianni yesterday, and just watch and listen to just what's percolating through. He was asked, how are you holding your players accountable during this losing streak? Here's what he had to say.
Same methods I use when we're winning. It's the exact same. When you change who you are, or you change your core values based off of wins and losses, that's when you're going to lose the team.
You don't have to voice all your criticisms of Jalen when he does something wrong publicly. But is it being told to him in the meeting room that when
I'm going to keep our conversations, like I said to the other guy, I'm going to keep my conversations with the players between me and the players. Accountability is our number three core value. And it's only number three because it came in that order. Connect, compete, accountability. They're not in any order. So accountability, when Chris asked me the question, accountability, I didn't say something to Chris that I'm not saying to you right now. Accountability is one of the main core values we have, and we live by those every single day.
Go ahead, Dave, and then Tim.
Hey, Nick, I think you'd probably agree that the standard hasn't been met on either side.
Yeah, I just said that 2 seconds ago. Go
ahead. Yeah, a little feisty.
Yeah, I like it, Nick Sirianni. I like it. He's mad. He's pissed off. I like it.
He's feeling the heat. You know, the thing is, the best way to be the coach of the Eagles is to make sure that the fans are pissed off on someone on the outside, which is when they're winning, they find somebody to be pissed off at on the outside, as you well know.
Right.
Seriously. When things aren't going well, they find people on the inside to get pissed off at. They're always pissed off. And I love that. It's not a criticism. It's just an observation.
Right.
Eagles fans are always pissed off about something. When it's going well, they're pissed off about someone like you. When it's not going well, they're pissed off about somebody. And I think that part of what Sirianni's trying to do here is run interference for the guy that they gave the huge contract to. I think a lot of this is we have to protect Jalen from the Eagles fans. We can't have the Eagles fans turn on the quarterback because we're kind of stuck for the next several years with this contract. And if they start criticizing him, the next step is, why did you idiots give him the big contract? And I'm not saying they're idiots for giving him the big contract. I'm just saying
they're trying to
seal this off
before
it becomes a thing.
Yeah.
They're trying to make sure that the Eagles fans who are currently looking for someone on the inside to be pissed off, just be pissed off at me as the head coach, because that's better than if you start saying, like you're saying, accurately, I would agree, that throw at the end of the game, different quarterback throws a touchdown, walk-off, winner. Jalen Hurts throws a ball that doesn't get there. And if you say that now, Eagles fans say you're an asshole. But the Eagles are trying to make sure that remains the case.
Yeah.
That their guy that they've anointed continues to and works through this and you know, they find a way to make him better and all the cliches.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're trying to protect him.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. I think that is part of it, and it's part of who they are, right? And they want their own team to continue their belief in Jalen Hurts. And then Jalen Hurts, of course, is, you know, a top-notch human being and worker, and he's like he does all the things that Nick Sirianni was trying to say that are the core principles of the team. You know, he stands for all of that, the accountability, the, you know, the preparation, the connecting, whatever, you know, other core values he was assessing there or talking about. You know, he's the poster child for the Eagles. And, yeah, as you've heard me say before, and this is true with a lot of great organizations, they want the quarterback to be a guy that the whole team believes in and looks at and, oh, we can win because he's here. And that's the aura that Jalen Hurts has, and it's taken a little bit, you know, of a hit here as of late, and they want to keep that aura alive and belief as they go into the playoffs and late in the season. And then I think when you accompany that with all the things that you said, yeah, I think that's very true of what's going on right there. They don't want any finger pointing at any players right now. He'll take the heat for whatever subject he's got to, but he's going to keep that locker room in order, and he's especially going to keep his quarterback propped up as the number one guy in that organization.
What do you think A.J. Brown was thinking when he was open down the sideline? What do you think he's thinking? He's thinking, guy's got to get me the ball. And that's one of the things that I think Sirianni's getting at. We can't have A.J. Brown starting to act like the receiver we're going to talk about in the next segment. We can't have A.J. Brown complaining to his teammates. We need him on board with this. We don't need others to say, Jalen's not getting the ball to where it needs to be.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And it feels like there's a little of that.
The quarterback
isn't
distributing the ball.
Right. It feels like there's a little of that. I mean, we know they had their little kerfuffle on the sideline during, you know, early in the season. And you can watch the game. You don't have to be a brain surgeon to watch A.J. Brown and his body language sometimes with some of these throws or missed opportunities where, you know, what do you think his frustration was when he got bumped on the sidelines by the Seahawks, you know, practice squad players and all that? He was going, damn, I'm open by 5 yards down the sideline, and the ball landed behind me and out of bounds, right? So that was part of the frustration why he wanted to beat up everybody on the Seahawks sideline too. Right. And you could, if you watch closely, you see that a number of times through the last few weeks of play over people, the receiver, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, look back at the quarterback like, damn, I'm open or you had me. And why didn't I get the ball or why is it inaccurate? And I think that they're trying to do damage control in that department and make sure, yeah, like you're saying, those guys don't show up the quarterback. And this becomes a big talking point in Philadelphia and everywhere else.
And Brown and Hurts are very close. Hurts is one of the reasons Brown is there. So there's less of a likelihood that there's going to be an issue. But this is Sirianni, I think you and I agree, trying to keep an issue from happening, something Mike Tomlin failed to do with receiver George Pickens. It's now gotten to the point where Tomlin is adding press conferences to his weekly schedule just to talk about his embattled receiver, George Pickens. We'll let you hear what Tomlin had to say on Wednesday when PFT Live continues right after this.